Under Elizabeth's strict governance, the minds of her two eldest boys, James and John, grew bright and agile, taking to tests and puzzles with an aptitude that delighted her. They were only too painfully aware of the consequences if they did not perform well. They had only to listen at the door of their mother's study when she was disciplining her youngest son, William, who sadly did not share his brother's intellectual gifts. The sound of the cane striking William's limbs and that of their mother's pitiless taunts was chilling, and they learnt to avoid her wrath. William was not so lucky. It often seemed to William that he had been born into the wrong family. A thin, pallid child, he envied his brother's talents and handsome features, neither of which had been passed on to him. Of his father, he remembered little, only that he often bore the brunt of his wife's scolding, as cruel as any caning William had ever received, with an unnatural calm that drove his mother into even greater fits of invective. When he died, the house took on an altogether more foreboding air. Once, his mother must have felt as the father did, as she had arranged for all manner of physicians to examine the boy, presumably to determine his lineage or his sanity. And then there were the foreign clerics, no doubt commissioned to drive out any mischievous demons which may have taken up residence in the lad, but to no avail. Whilst the more generous claimed that there was something not right in the boy's head, none could deter Elizabeth from her unshakable conviction that William was simply lazy and maliciously stubborn. As for William himself, he always knew there was something wrong inside, but no one asked him. He would spend hours staring at a page in a book, concentrating with all the mental vigour he could summon, and yet the words would make no sense. The tutors would persevere for a time, and even his brothers, in a charitable moment, might offer assistance, but still the words would make no sense. Before his eyes, the letters swam, shuffled, and pranced about, doing anything but sitting still on the page long enough for him to decipher them. As for the sums, well, that was like reading, only worse. 2 + 2 seldom equaled 4, except when it was counted out whilst the cane was being brought down on his white knuckles. But the very worst was writing. Squeezing hard on the quill his mother had specially purchased for all her sons, William carefully dipped it in the inkpot and brought the nib to the blank page, cupping the falling ink into his other hand. Yet when it met the paper, he could only manage a few tense scrawls before the nib invariably got caught in the thick fibres, and he tore the first sheet, blotting the rest of his exercise book in the process. He sobbed convulsively over his shame that it only brought unwelcome attention to his handiwork. Sometimes he fought back the tears and managed to secrete the stained, sodden books through a gap in the floorboards beneath his desk, but more often than not he was caught defacing the page, a punishment for which was severe. The cane sang briefly before it bit into his flesh, and then a throbbing numbness passed over him. Afterwards, his mother sent him to consider his crimes in the cool, dark room at the top of the stairs. On the day of examination, when the boys were to be judged for their future placement in the halls of learning, William pleaded with his mother that he was unprepared for such a test, but she would have none of it, insisting the experience would focus the boy's mind and energies and put an end once and for all to his willful laziness. James and John acquitted themselves with distinction, as expected, while young William struggled mightily with his tasks, but succeeded only in covering his books with illegible scribbles and oceans of ink. Racked with anxiety, The boy waited for his mother to bid the inspectors goodbye and apologize for her youngest, who is a constant disappointment to her. And then the storm broke. Dame Elizabeth sent James and John out of the room, while she fetched the birch cane resting idly in the corner of the study and approached William. The boy flinched at the first cut, which ripped viciously across his forearms, and the next, which tore across the back of his legs. The cane became a blur of pain, and he lost count of the strokes, but he would not cry out. Elizabeth was overcome with a rage that terrified her, and still she beat him. The stick crashed down on the cowering boy's head and back, and still she beat him. It was as if someone else held the cane, and she became a helpless onlooker. The boy crumpled to the ground, and still she beat him. Elizabeth only stopped when her other sons burst into the room and restrained her hand. Horrified at what their mother had done, James and John removed William from her presence and carried his unconscious form to the place at the top of the stairs where they locked him in. Elizabeth was summoned to court the next day and sent her eldest sons to their aunt some miles away, leaving William to fend for himself. She had no reason to believe that she would be kept away for 3 days, but on her return, accompanied by James and John, she hurried up the stairs to where William would be waiting, and found the lifeless body of her youngest boy curled up on the cold floor. At least there would be no further lessons.